Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Eight-Legged Freak Williams.
Yeah, that's a different movie than what we're talking about today.
We are on the subject of arachnophobia, which is also another movie.
That was a good one.
But not the spider movie you may have heard. We are talking about the recently released independent film, Itsy Bitsy. So stick around as we jump into that, as we got some differing thoughts here, and we may have ourselves a little bit of a clash in our conversation, so we'll see.
The Filmlosophers podcasts are creepily brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Each Wednesday morning, check to see how much of your foot the spider ate, and then head on over and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platform, such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom, and Pandora!
Pandora!
The Itsy Bitsy Spider... The Itsy Bitsy Spider crawled up the water spout, then joined us on social media.
That's
because
right.
It was Charlotte! She's back, y'all!
That was a smart spider.
Come crawl along with us by connecting with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101.
That's right.
Finally, don't upset the gods, especially the spider gods. They have many legs.
They do.
And head on over and check out our entire list of episodes at filmlosophers.com.
Your demeanor just went straight down as soon as you realized we were getting to the closer end of that segment of you talking about where we're at. That's interesting.
Hey,
Whatever. I don't have to take this. You're not my dad. We got over 180 episodes on our website, so head over there, check them out. We got everything from the recently released Joker to Spencer taking the reins and talking about his favorite franchise, Back to the Future.
Yeah.
So we got all those episodes. I bet you still didn't even remember what episode your Back to the Future episode is.
No, there's 180 of them, Eddie.
Check out Lesson 184, which is Spencer's Back to the Future episode. But before you do that, we got a special episode in store, as we're going to be talking about the recently released horror film prime for this Halloween season, and that is Itsy Bitsy. Now, this is a film that just recently dropped, and Spencer and I both saw it. We saw it at different times, oddly enough, but we did see it. And so we actually haven't had a big opportunity to talk about it. All that I know is Spencer has a different point of view on this film than I do. So this is going to be interesting. So Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
An ancient mysterious relic unleashes a giant prehistoric spider that terrorizes a single mother and her two children in their new house.
Yep, in the most simplest of terms, that's it.
Very accurate. Good job.
Directed by independent filmmaker Micah Gallo, the film stars Bruce Davison, Denise Crosby, Elizabeth Roberts, Trevor Etienne, Eileen Dietz, and Maddie Carter-Ropel, Chloe Perrin, and Armand Darbo. These are all independent actors. Other than Bruce Davison or Denise Crosby, I'm not too sure about the rest of these. Maybe Elizabeth Roberts, but the film actually started out as a Kickstarter created by the director, and the film hit its goal at like a little over 100%. Pretty quickly, actually. And the film was being funded as not just a, quote, old-school creature film with a terrifying giant spider at the center, but also so much more.
So this is a Kickstarter movie.
It started out as a Kickstarter.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's kind of the caveat to a lot of this, is that the film itself does not look like a Kickstarter film.
No.
It looks really good. And you know what their goal was for the movie?
$40,000. What?
That's it.
Okay.
Now, that was their goal. I don't know how much their overall budget was, but that's how much they asked for from Kickstarter.
Okay. That's not bad.
Yeah. The film relied heavily on practical effect as opposed to CG, which is near and dear to my heart. I love that. The film's giant spider was brought to life with the help of special effects master Dan Raybert, whose models, prosthetics, and effects design have been featured in True Blood, Stargate SG-1, and James Gunn's Slither. Mm. They actually also took... I believe because I actually did an interview not too well. Actually, it was too long ago. It was a couple of years ago when Micah first threw this Kickstarter onto this project on a Kickstarter, and I remember talking with him, and he had mentioned that they actually went and talked to the people who created the special effects for the movie Jumanji.
Okay.
So if the spiders in Jumanji look familiar, it's because they actually used the similar body structure from Jumanji's spiders and then retrofitted them for this film to work for them here.
That's really clever.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if you remember Jumanji, but that was the part that creeped the heck out of me. Every time I would see that movie, I'm like those big old spiders with like dripping fangs and everything. So yeah, this film... So it's making its bigger debut theatrically in small batches and small releases here and there. However, thanks to a lot of these streaming platforms that are out and available nowadays, we actually had the opportunity to purchase the film on Vudu and check it out, which is really great because I've actually... So I don't know if you knew this, Spence, but I've been actually anticipating this film for the last 2 years. For the fact that, like I said, I did have a conversation with him, but I remember when this trailer debuted and it was sent to me by the PR teams and they were like, hey, we want you to check out this film. It's really interesting. And one of my family's favorite films has always been Arachnophobia from the early 90s.
Interesting.
So seeing this immediately brought me vibes back from Arachnophobia, which was pretty cool because for me, I can... It's been a while since I've seen Arachnophobia. You know, Jeff Daniels, John Goodman, really great film. I will never, ever put on slippers without, like, feeling the inside first.
Yeah.
Although that old man had it coming because he was a jerk.
Yeah, he sucked.
But that's a horrible thing to say about an old man.
But he was awful.
No, I said the same thing. That's okay. What I'm saying. We're being terrible. Either way.
But he was terrible first. So
he was
started.
Terrible. He deserved to die. But I say all that to say, watching the trailer, when I first saw it, I was like, man, this looks great. Like, this could be the now generation of Arachnophobia. Because nowadays, you get a lot of people and they're like, oh, that's not the same. Things aren't like that anymore. Blah, 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 blah. This, this, and that. You're not my dad. So it's like...
A lot of that going around.
A lot of people saying you're not their dad.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Okay. You don't want to be somebody's dad, Spencer.
I don't.
Just saying.
Okay. Continue.
So with that, like a lot of people are just, there's not a lot of people open to newer, to watching those movies in this day and age because of the fact of all the new effects and everything else and blah, blah, blah. So you take a movie like Itsy Bitsy and it brings that same sense of terror and dread back to the forefront in the trailer. When I first saw it, it brought back all those memories of like, oh man, I remember the first time I saw Arachnophobia and this is the vibe it gave me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been anxious. And then I had a conversation with Micah and his team about all their, you know, hopes and their dreams for creating the film and actually pushing forward for it to be produced and created and distributed, which they were able to do. And lo and behold, it appeared in my Vudu. I bought it as soon as I saw it. And sure enough, for me, however, like I know I was immediately engaged because I had been expecting it.
Right.
But going back to you, thrown into your hands over there, what were some of your expectations when it came to like, well, okay, let's take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
What is your history with phobias and movies that are things like this? Like you got Arachnophobia, you got... people who are like scared of clowns that have like clownophobia or whatever. I don't know what phobia, what all the phobias are. But like people who watch movies and then are like, yeah, you know, that's not for me.
Yeah, I think for me, it's pretty much limited to arachnophobia because I saw that one too as a kid. Yeah, I was not just going to be putting on my shoes without looking in them for like, I was doing that for weeks, just like clapping my shoes together, like over something that wasn't my feet. You just gotta watch out for those like secret spiders that can instantly kill you.
Yeah, I took one spider and it took him down.
Yeah, it was super fast. So that's really my history with that. But yeah, going into this movie, I really wasn't sure what to expect.
I had showed you the trailer at your house.
You had, but like.
This is one of the unfortunate parts about podcasting is he said that, yes, you had, while his eyes rolled extremely from the bottom right all the way to the top left in this fell swoop across the land of this studio.
Okay.
His roll was strong and mighty because of the fact that I asked him if he had seen it. And the moment he realized it, he's like, oh, yeah, that trailer. Your eyes said so much more than just your words right there.
Okay, so the trailer, I guess, it was a fine trailer.
You say it was a fine trailer?
Yeah, it was fine.
What are you, from the 1800s? That's a fine horse you have there today, sir. It was a fine
day. People still use the word fine?
Only when they're not fine. Like, are you fine? Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm cool. Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. It was a good trailer, however.
However,
I was not a big fan of the I know that, like, it's called Itsy Bitsy, but yeah. Like the whole little girl singing Itsy Bitsy Spider at the end of it, I was like,
yeah, but okay, because I do remember you bringing that up. I remember that, and I remember you saying it was a problem for you. However, people have been doing that for trailers for the last few years with taking certain songs and then refixing them up to be more somber or more, you know, unique so that they can use them in movies that aren't so upbeat and whatnot. Like,
okay, like, that's, depends on what you're doing. I think I'm a little over, like, let's use children to sing a song and make it creepy. I think that's, like, the narrow scope.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't have a problem with that idea in general. I think it's actually creative when you take like something like you, like how you were talking to me like about Five on It from Us.
Yeah.
Like, I love that one because I thought that was a great idea.
That's right, because you said the bus driver used to sing that all the time. Got it.
No.
No, but here's the thing though, like I think that right there is a, because it's not used in the film.
Right.
It's not used.
It was interesting, too.
However,
I was expecting that song to just pop out somewhere.
To be honest, I wasn't. I thought it was just a unique way to use it in there as a way to kind of do a callback to like classic horror films that utilize that sense of innocence as a point of fear for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like you take obviously the most obvious choice, which is Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. Like that was a big twist on that song for that.
What song?
It's like there's a kid's song that they use that it's based on.
Oh.
You didn't know that?
No.
What is it? 1, 2,
oh, buckle my
shoe. 3, 4, shut the door. Yeah, like it's based on an actual song.
Oh, I guess I never made that connection. Well, who sings that song?
Everybody who knows the kids one?
Yeah, the kids one.
Kids? I would assume.
Well, you know, it's been a long time.
I was a preschool teacher. My kids used to sing it all the time, too.
All right.
Spencer, it's been a while since you've been a child.
Yes.
It's been
30
years.
I guess there just wasn't an overlap between me being a child and knowing that song and me being not a child and knowing the Freddy song.
See, I grew up as a child knowing the Freddy song. So I think the biggest thing to kind of keep in mind is like, I'm thinking that was a really great callback to what classic horror, classic American horror during the 80s was about. Like, you take anything that has to do with children, which just about every single one of the movies from the late 70s through the 80s, every single horror film had to do with children. Whether if it was, you know, Friday the 13th, about kids about a kid that drowns while the camp counselors were, you know, doing dirty deeds and then they start getting killed while they're watching kids or whatever. Or obviously Nightmare on Elm Street, which is about these kids that are haunted by this guy in their dreams. To Halloween, Michael Myers going after these kids and this girl who's in high school. you know, to Sleepaway Camp, to everything else you can think of during the time of the 80s, horror films were kind of circling around the fragility, if you will, of youth innocence. And I think this was a really great way to call back to that. Mm. Now, mind you, I can see where you're kind of over that trope, which is fine. You can be. But I don't know. I liked it. Okay. So I don't know. But like, what else about the trailer were you, did you notice or did catch your eye?
Really not much. Like, I was like, okay, they're dealing with spider. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, for me personally, I'm in a post-Disney Lied to Me in their trailer world.
Oh my gosh. Nobody is safe from Spencer's cynical mindset because of the House of Mouse. Great. That's wonderful.
Well, you know, I don't, like, even before that, like, trailers I kind of put limited stock into. Like, I just, like, they should give, like, a general idea of, like, what kind of movie it is and what it's dealing with. And then that usually is like, okay, I'm either on board with this or I'm not.
With a movie?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. I mean, and mind you, that's what trailers are meant to do. Mm-hmm. Most of the time when it comes to movies that are being made, the trailer usually has another company cut and create a trailer for their movie. Mm-hmm. It's usually not done in-house. Right. However, as we stated, this was a Kickstarter, so who knows if they had the funds to do that kind of thing. I don't know if that was something they did or if it was something that they just opted to be like, all right, well, whatever, you know. Who knows? But either way. So, aside from that, any other expectations before going into this film, finally seeing it?
No. I was like, okay, let's do this.
So, I am going to mention this is a spoiler review.
Oh.
So, we are going to talk about things.
Oh, it is listed there. I was like, is it?
No. This is going to be a spoiler review. However, we'll be respectful enough to not give away the key parts of the ending, however, and we'll save that for another conversation. But this is going to be a spoiler review. So, first impressions at the end of the film. Spence, go.
Why am I starting this section?
No, because then if I say something and you'll be like, oh, that sounds good, I'll go ahead and take that. I don't want you taking my stuff.
I don't steal your stuff.
I can go first if you want.
No, okay. So, I don't know.
Did I give you enough time? Did I give
you okay, at the end of the movie, I had a few lingering questions about certain things that had transpired, like, in the last bit of the movie.
Okay.
Because throughout the movie, like, I actually really liked certain parts of this movie because I thought it was well done.
Yeah.
But it was really revolving around the dynamic between the mom and her children.
Yeah.
A lot of that kind of felt unresolved to me because earlier in the movie, when she's like, okay, I guess we're just going to pack up and go, like, I know she's been through, like, the whole spider ordeal at this point, but, like,
yeah,
it felt very similar to that. And I was like, I'm concerned that she's just setting these kids up for failure again. And
but like, all right, round two, kids.
On the flip side, like, you know, the movie did a really good job about making me actually care about the kids in that aspect.
Yeah, I have to agree. Like, I think this film, right after the film ended, the first thing I kind of came to realize was, like, I was literally grabbing the edge of the couch that I was sitting on as I was watching this because I was legitimately engaged with whether or not these kids make it. Mm-hmm. Because the young boy in this film, he's a really great actor. The kid,
mm-hmm.
I gotta give him props because he really, you know, acted his butt off in this film.
Yeah, there was especially this part where he's confronting his mom in this.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's a combination of, like, I'm standing up to you, but I'm also kind of scared about this.
Yeah.
And I was like, Ooh, this kid's doing it right. This looks like it's also his first movie that he's been in.
Armin Darbo.
Yeah, I think so.
That's quite a name, Armin Darbo.
Because nothing else popped up.
I mean, he's got other roles. A lot of them are all small roles. Mm. So he might just still be within that like independent film circuit.
Yeah, but he's really decent.
He is. And I got to give him credit because he did carry a good brunt of the emotionally logical weight of the film, if that's a way to put it. Mm-hmm. Like, he was part of the whole process of moving forward the film without getting rid of, like, without getting lost in, like, too much of the emotional weeds where, like, the mom played a great train wreck. Mm-hmm. Like, this mom in this movie is
hot
not
mess. Hot the mess. Of mess.
She is the hottest of messes out there, played by Elizabeth Roberts. She's this woman who is completely just stuck in this state of perpetual depression, self-medicates, just recently was apparently let go. It doesn't really state in the terms of like specifics, but for some reason she no longer works as a nurse in New York after the loss of her child in a car accident, which you don't know if the car accident was due to her self-medicating.
See, that's the thing I was curious about the whole movie.
Yeah, whether or not the accident was due to her self-medicating or the self-medicating is a result of the accident, yeah. But she does lose her youngest child. Her and her husband end up splitting due to it, and she ends up coming out to this small town area to be a in-home nurse for Bruce Davison's character, Walter Clark. Mm. In the midst of that, she is still continuing to self-medicate with pain pills while she is doing her job. And the great thing about it is that I don't know who this woman is. I don't think I've ever seen her in much of anything else, Elizabeth Roberts. But if anybody ever, ever needs to hire somebody who looks borderline like a crack addict, like, and I don't mean that to be rude to the woman, but like this woman had like all the right vibes. Like,
yeah, she really did.
She did. Like the pupils were dilated. She was like, she had the slight shakes. They weren't the strong on shakes where she's like losing control of herself. She just, oh my gosh, she was phenomenal. And I'm like, yeah, I would legitimately believe you have a substance abuse problem. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not to the point to where you're losing control of yourself, but I would be worried to be around you and I would hold on to my wallet as I walk by you. And of course, that is supplemented and combated against by the sheriff of the town, Sheriff Jane Dunn.
Denise Crosby.
Played by the wonderful Denise Crosby.
Yes.
How do you know Denise Crosby?
Star Trek. When I saw Denise Crosby on the credits at the beginning, I was like, oh, Denise Crosby's in this movie. I didn't know that. It's Tasha Yar. So I was like, I went from like, okay, I'm like seeing this movie to, oh, I'm here for this movie now that I know she's in it.
Well, I'm glad to know that you were there for the right reasons.
Yes, of course.
Which Star Trek? The Tasha Yar. Oh, that was TNG.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So what I know her from is I know her from 48 Hours, Deep Impact, and Pet Sematary.
She's in Deep Impact?
Yeah, she's one of the researchers.
Oh, okay.
But she's also the mom in Pet Sematary.
Okay.
Oddly enough, go figure, this film is about a mother who loses her youngest male child in an accident. In Pet Sematary, Denise is a mother who loses her youngest boy child in a freak accident.
Interesting.
So I just thought that the parallels were really uncanny. So Denise Crosby plays this wonderful sheriff. Like, she is so insightful. Whoever did the writing for this film, like, kudos to you. Like, this film was very well written because a lot of the sheriff's lines and her back and forth with the crack addict of a mom.
Well, like, just all of her lines, like, even when she's, like, trying to get, like, the teen boy on her side, it's like, you know, Sherlock Holmes needs a Dr. Watson. And like,
yeah,
this sheriff's on it. Like, if she was running for sheriff in Sacramento,
I would hire her in a bit.
Yes.
Like in a second, hot second.
Get her up here.
But she's so perfect for the role. She's got this, because it's not even like a grandmotherly like presence. It's more of like an older, authoritative female in this role. She is complete awesomeness in this film. Like, she is somebody I was rooting for from the moment I saw her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just watching, and even her first interaction with a mom, like, it's so great how that roller coaster of that conversation goes, where she's like, you know, is everything okay? And whatever. And the mom's like, I just, not to be rude, but I wanted to be alone. And she goes, well, she's like, that's fine. You know, however, it looks like I have this whole little sixth sense kind of thing. And it feels like you want to tell me something. And it's like, it was almost like I was watching a real life cop totally like de-escalate a situation to get information out of somebody. Cause I was like about to say, like, I stole money when I was in fifth grade. I'm sorry. Because it just felt right for her, even to the point to where she came to this stopping point in the conversation, going back and forth, almost toying with her, all very politely and very warmly, to where she's like, well, she's like, here's the thing. I know you're doing something to help yourself. I see your eyes are, you know, your pupils are dilated. Your hands can't stop shaking. I see you, and you're not fooling anyone. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, when she said that, I was like, she's so on point right now. Because I was like, before she sat down, I was like, who does this woman think she's fooling? There's something wrong with her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, thank you for coming up and just slapping her with the truth, because she needed it. She did.
She needed a good slap in the face.
A true tough slap. Love.
She's the female Dr. Phil. You know, and that was a great way to create the awareness for the mom character that, like, her whole facade is cracking. She's losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And this sheriff, somebody who is in a place to actually do something, notices and is watching her, you know, especially since she has two little kids at home and she's working for some man who, unfortunately, isn't really explained from the town side, like how they perceive him.
Mm-hmm.
All you get is that one little point where it's like she goes to the pharmacy and she's like, oh, I'm here to pick up a script for, you know, Walter Clark. And he goes, Walter Clark? And she goes, yeah, do you know him? And he goes, yeah, I know him. And
yeah.
Then walks off. I'm like, I want to know more. What does he know? Like, did he start out as a grave robber there in the local town or something? Like,
yeah, I thought that was going to be like something that we came back to, but we really didn't.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting how they chose to go that route. However, I think the usage of Bruce Davison in the role of Walter Clark, it's been a while since I've seen Bruce Davison in anything. Have you ever seen him in movies?
I think so.
I have the hiccups. Oh my God, I'm hiccuping on air.
Yeah, stop that.
Forget you. No, he played Senator Kelly in X-Men, you remember?
Oh, yeah, because I saw like a slightly younger version of his face somewhere, and I was like, he looks awfully familiar, but I can't place it.
Yeah, I mean, he was in several different things. I mean, he's literally been all over TV and movies, from everything like X-Men to X2 to he was in Law and Order. He was in... oh my gosh, he's been in everything.
Yeah, he was in like a long page of stuff. Like last night, since you weren't there, I just went on like this rabbit hole of like trailers things that he was somehow adjacent to. I somehow ended up on Lucille Ball. I don't even know how that happened.
How'd you get to Lucille Ball?
I don't know.
That makes no sense at all.
That's what happened. That's what happens down the rabbit hole.
Hey, he was in Star Trek. Well, he was in a Star Trek, something called Star Trek Captain Pike.
When was that shot?
No, it's a short series. Or it's
year?
A film.
What year?
2016.
Interesting.
Tells a pre-Kirk story about what happened on the Rigel 7 prior to the Cage episode of the original Star Trek series. This is the story of Captain Pike when he first takes command of the Enterprise in his first mission aboard her. So there you go, Spencer. Everybody's connected.
It all comes back to Star Trek.
It does. But it's still, like, the film, I think, is pretty sound. Now, you made a really unique remark, and I kind of wanted to bring it up and not just put you on blast, but also talk about it.
It was mostly to put me on blast.
You said this was a great Lifetime film that needed to get rid of the whole spider part.
Okay, because, like the spider for, like, a good chunk of the movie is kind of, like, doing background things. And I'm like, you know, if you tossed out this movie, the spider, not the movie, it's just the spider, and, like, focused more on, like, the whole family dynamic, you still have a pretty good movie there.
Yeah, it is still a great movie.
Like, I didn't mean that as an insult. I really, I don't know where you put family dramas besides Lifetime.
ABC? I don't know. Anywhere? Like, family movies are not just for, like, one singular channel. Like, let's toss in a Christmas tree and put it on Hallmark. You know, I don't know.
That's exactly what happens.
Shush. No, I think though the element of this film, I think for me personally, because I do see your perspective, like, well, because the story element is strong. Mm-hmm. Like, there are strong parts in this film where you sincerely feel for, like, the kids, for even for the mom at a point in time until you realize, like, oh my gosh, she's just horrible.
Yeah, it was probably around the time she stole that old guy's meds where I was like, okay, I'm out of you.
Well, and you see her eyeball it when she gets to the house the first time, and you're like,
yeah, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, and it took me a second to realize, like, oh, until you actually saw her own personal pill bottle, mm-hmm. which, mind you, side note, this film does really well in, like, the small minor details.
Yeah, the whole pill bottle had the scratched off
exactly
prescription label.
Well, and all the elements throughout the whole film, like recognizing all the little pieces here and there and putting them together to make the whole, and I don't know. It was really unique for me, but I think this film has a great story element, which goes back to the writing. But I think it's coupled with a great buildup for a horror aspect of, like, who hasn't felt like the tiny spider that they feel crawling down their back is, like, the size of a Subway sandwich. Like, I've felt like that before, and I freaked out. Like, I grew up, so I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, but I grew up in a small house in a town called Uvalde, Texas. I started out there when we first moved out there. I started out there, and I remember the realtor used to take us there during the day, be like, oh, yeah, this is the house we want you guys to rent out. It looks nice. It's this, it's that. Look at it. It's roomy inside, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, oh, okay, all right. Yeah, cool, sure. And so my parents end up signing the papers. We end up going out one night, and it's a small town, so you can't really go anywhere. You go to the McDonald's on the edge of town and come back. But we went out, and when we came back, we were looking at the house. We're like, what's going on? And we looked and we're like, oh my gosh, somebody threw dirt clots at our house. Like, because it looks like all these little dirt spots. And then all of a sudden we realized the dirt spots were moving. The house was infested with tarantulas. And nope. Because there was a large forest behind it. And so we came to realize that we were having to, like, kill tarantulas every day in almost every room in the house. My dad would get up every few hours every night just to go and check on me and my brother to make sure there was no spiders on us. I'm looking at your face and it's priceless.
Because you suddenly make a lot more sense to me.
Hey!
Like, I understand why you like horror movies. They're not like, they're like coming home, apparently. Oh. That's what it seems like. Because this is a nightmare. I would be freaking out if this was my life. That sounds horrible. And that realtor should feel horrible for not even, like,
oh my gosh.
That is awful.
It was an interesting part of my life, I can say that much. But, like, every time we would be in the living room and we would be sitting there and we would be watching TV, and then you just heard a
no,
like,
cause, no.
Because it was one of those houses that had, like, a raised floor off of the ground, so there was, like, under parts, and so you could hear the wood, the tapping on the wood. So we would hear it. We would turn around, look, and to see where the spider went, and then we would see whose turn it was to go and kill it. And so I learned how to be deadly with a broom at arm's length and, like, kill it. So... I mean, that was just life.
This is a horror movie. This is the life of a person who lives in a horror movie.
I mean, it was okay. I had a great view from the room. It had a bay window when I was a kid.
That bay window, though.
our trash can in the house used to get filled with dead tarantulas.
Oh, my God.
But I say all that to say I know what it feels like or what it sounds like when you hear something crawling down the way in the hallway and you're like, oh my God, how big is it this time? Like, you're just worried. So this movie, mind you, despite all that, which that happened between like 94 and 97,
mm-hmm.
Probably 94 and 98, like that happened and we still really enjoyed Arachnophobia.
Wait a minute, wait, whoa. You were watching Arachnophobia in, like, this house?
Well, we saw it a few times.
Oh, my gosh. I would have died.
Thankfully, I didn't, because I didn't realize. I didn't realize until afterwards, like, there's mostly two types of tarantulas.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, Mexican tarantulas, and then there's, like, black tarantulas or whatever.
Okay.
And... I think the brown and the black, and I think the brown ones or the black ones are the ones that bite. One of them, one of the types were aggressively forward, and I think they would bite, although I think maybe both of them bit. I don't know.
Okay.
They were, so let me put it to you this way. Have you seen like those styrofoam plates, like the regular ones you buy at like the store and all
yes,
that?
Yes, the cheaper
they,
ones.
They were about as big as those.
No, Eddie, no. Eddie. Eddie, I live in California. I have no point of reference for this story.
They would get
this is
so
a
big.
Nightmare.
They would get so big. I remember we had gone out to go visit the town about a month or two before we moved out there. We went out to visit because we had family out there, and we went to go visit. And I remember we pulled up in the middle of the road, and my aunt looks out the window, and there's a tarantula in the middle of the street. And the first thing she says is, "Oh, somebody lost their pet," and. Little did I know, they're everywhere. They're everybody's pet. But I say all that to say I know what spiders sound like or what it feels like to have the terror of knowing there's a spider somewhere looking at you from some part of the room. So this film definitely brings the creep factor for that, and I actually enjoyed it. It wasn't a return to home feeling. I'm not like... watching Fern Gully or anything brought back memories like, oh, Land Before Time vibes. You know, this was more of like, you know, I enjoy that level of fear and anticipation that horror movies usually bring, because that's the whole idea of what a horror movie does. It gets your heart racing. It gets you wondering what's around the next corner and makes you think who is the next victim and who will be the victor at the end. Like, you find yourself in this race against your anxiety and your heart rate for the ending of this film and the time frame when it's over. And this is one of those feelings that you get when you watch this. And I think this is a great example of that, because I know I thought at one point in time, I'm like, oh, shoot, he killed it with a swipe. All right. Good job, Jesse. I think that was the kid's name.
Yeah.
And then you're like, all right, cool. And the mom's like, oh, go get help. Go whatever. And it turned into a complete Halloween moment, because she's sitting there against the wall and you see the spider curled up like if it's dead, which is what they do normally. Now I'm like worried about my feet, where my feet are at underneath this desk. And then you look at it and then you're like, okay, and she sees it. And then she closes her eyes for a brief second, opens them up, and the spider's gone. And I'm like, oh, heck no, techno. Like, no, I know what that feeling looks like, because I made those mistakes earlier on when I was killing tarantulas. You hit it, it goes down, they curl up. You're like, all right, let me go get the dustpan. You go get the dustpan, the thing's gone. It's gone, Spitz. You check your shoes. No, no joke. In all honesty, you had to check your shoes because they like to go into the
See,
shoes.
See, I didn't even have this problem when I checked my shoes. I would be a train wreck.
They would actually burrow into the shoes because they were like, it felt like the little holes that they would make in the ground.
Oh, no.
And then they would jump out like this. Like surprise. No, not like that, but like more aggressively. So we always had to like step on the front of our shoes first before we put them on.
Okay, so like listening to your stories, it makes me realize that I might be missing just a tiny, tiny piece of the aspect that this movie brings up. Because like there were times in the movie where like, you know, the spider would make noise and like you'd hear pitter patter like in the attic or something. And I was like, I've never heard a spider. A spider don't make noises.
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, because I don't. I am vastly
unfamiliar
with
Spencer, do you hear this?
That
is just my hand making noise on the table. Can you imagine this big old spider, the size of Captain America's shield, waddling around upstairs in the attic? You don't think it's going to make noise? And then that house is God knows how old.
Yeah, that's much more terrifying.
Yeah, you think? Like, I would have freaked out. Like, so this is going to scare you even more. They weren't just on the walls and on the floor. They would sometimes be on the ceiling. So you would hear it, or you would feel the little, like, the popcorn spackle stuff that would be up there.
Oh.
You would see it fall.
Oh, no.
And so you would get freaked out. Everybody would have to move out of the way, and then someone would have to get the broom. So I know what that fear feels like.
Oh,
and what
gosh.
This is my life, Spence. I mean, if I'm lying, I'm dying. You can ask my parents. You know them. They will gladly tell you the tales of how my dad would have to get up every few hours to go and check on them. And it was interesting. It was quite the ordeal. But I think going back to this film, that's why I think what I love about this film is it brings me back to that feeling of like fear and anticipation and dread. Like, what are your basic fears? What are your basic, you know, insecurities? What are the things at a basic level that make you scared of the world around you? Whether if it's public speaking or clowns or people who, you know, get too close when they talk, or like, you know, what
it's
are some
weird.
or even in an animal, you know, even in the animal world, like what are some of the ones that just scare the bejesus out of you? Are they like crocodiles, alligators? Are they sharks? Are they spiders? Are they ants? Are they, you know, wild raccoons? I don't know. Whatever it may be, there's a basic sense of fear in those things, and films like this find that basic sense and then just amp it up to an 11 and create this unique experience of like totally removing any vulnerability you may have and just and putting on display for you a unique story that carries that fear and dread and builds it to the very end. Like, seriously, I have no idea how that ending happened. I don't know how. I would have died. Like, I just would have died the way this film ends, which we're not going to divulge how the film ends. We'll leave it at that. We are going to, you know, we'll mention, you know, there's a scene, like, even the idea, there's a scene where, unfortunately, Walter Clark does die by a spider that starts out by gnawing on his feet.
Okay, the spider gets into the bed with him, and I was like, no, thank you. I don't need that.
That's what I was wondering, if they were going to show that scene, because there's a scene in the trailer that has where you see the spider crawling into the bed at the foot of it, and I'm like, I wonder if that's what my dad expected to see every time he came into the room. Like, because that's a scary thought. A big old spider, like something small or little, like you can kick it or you can squeeze it or you can do whatever out of the way. But something like that, that thing's taking up a quarter of the size of the bed. Like,
yeah.
And then you see it was literally gnawing at one point in time on Walter's foot because it's bloody and chewed. And so he crawls his way to the bathroom, closes the door, and I'm like, oh, that's smart. You know, seclude where the spider is because it's somewhere out there.
Yeah.
All right, cool. He goes to the bathroom, looks up. The spider's right above him, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I would die.
I just don't understand how it could be that fast.
It's a spider. It's a spider, Spencer. Have you not seen these things move?
I've seen, like, the ones we have in California. They are not that big, and they are not that fast, and that is the way I like them, apparently.
What? I don't think you know.
I haven't gone to the forest. I haven't seen like the where's
Spencer
in the forest.
So there's a spider.
Okay,
before
you start talking, I need you to realize I have to live here. Like, don't burst any bubbles. I can't take it. Like I can watch a horror movie about a big spider, but like, ooh, there's actually a similar sized spider that lives down the street from you. I'm moving. Like, I'm not playing around.
I don't even know what to say. But it's like there are spiders that move at 1.7, the fastest spider is a giant house spider, and it actually runs at a speed of 1.73 feet per second.
1.73 now, feet per second.
That's a mile an hour. At walking speed. So if you look at this table, this is about maybe 3 feet this way. That's 3 seconds to get from here to there.
No, thank you.
So you can imagine this prehistoric spider running at full speed can go anywhere he wants, Spencer.
Yeah, that's pretty fast. Damn.
I mean, when we would hit those tarantulas, if we didn't hit it right on, those things scurried, and you better hope it wasn't coming for your toes. They have fangs. I mean, it's still they're not dangerous. They don't have venom, but they have fangs. They bite.
Did you ever attack them shoeless? Like, don't you,
Spencer,
wear, like,
I lived
protection?
In the house. What I mean, what was I supposed to do? Walk around with like boots all the time?
Yes.
No.
Ah.
But that's what I'm saying though. That sense of dread and that sense of anxiety of like I can see you scratching your neck already, like in anxiety. I that's how this film makes you feel. Like you're looking around the house while you're watching this movie, and you're like, oh my gosh, what do I have around me that I haven't cleaned? Like, it makes you, like, super insecure about that one cabinet that you haven't cleaned for, like, ages. Or that one drawer that you know is so dense with other stuff that you can't fit your fingers all the way through. So you really have to push your hand in there. And you don't know what's at the back of that drawer.
It sounds like you need to clean a drawer.
very true. But I'm just saying, like, that's the kind of mindset, like, this film gives you.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, this insecure feeling of dread and fear and uncertainty of what is it in the natural world around us are we not aware of that has the ability to take us out in the blink of an eye?
Oh, so many things.
True. And so many things that we know of. But how about the unknown? That's the bigger kicker.
Yeah, like, I'm a bit busy worried about like the known things to worry about the unknown. I don't have time for all that.
I just, you know, that's one of the things I have to appreciate about this film. This film really does a great job of, you know, showcasing that, of giving people the view of like, you know, being in a place like this, having real issues, because the issues were relatable. That's the great thing about the writing. They created a wonderful story that was so engaging. You're like, dude, this is, like you said, this is legitimately on a level where if they remove the spider aspect, this still would be a great film.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. And then you have that on top of this prehistoric, like, killer spider who is looking for a sacrifice so that it can eat it or something, like, take it out. It's all so just built up. It's like the crossroads of this film coming to this crash at the end of beautiful chaos and mayhem and destruction. And it's like, yeah, this movie's gonna have me like keeping my feet close to me tonight in the bed. But yeah, I mean, that's the part that you have to appreciate about this film, is it actually does that effortlessly, because you're engaged in the story. You want the kids to survive as well as everybody else, obviously, in the house to survive. And on top of all that, you know there's something lurking in the wings that is ready to pounce, which we see it pounce early on in the film when it takes out that ugly cat in the movie in a quickness.
Yeah, when that girl was into that cat, I was like, you're going to lose that cat in this movie. And that, oh yeah, yeah, that when that spider went after the cat,
yeah. So,
I wasn't upset though.
Spence is not a cat person.
I am not.
But I mean, that's part of that appreciation, and the way the film wraps up, it wraps up really nicely. It's really good, to an extent to where I felt a little bit more looser with the story elements. However, you had a different perspective in terms of the way the film ends, with certain things still being loose ends, still having loose ends.
You don't have that wrap everything up in a neat bow, but it would be nice to know what direction they might be going in, you know?
Yeah. Which, that's also to say, like, if this is the only film they're going to do in this franchise, like, they could turn it into a franchise, essentially, you know, and then see where the sequel follows them up with, you know, what happens with them, what happens with whoever else is involved.
Yeah, that's also my other sticking point is, I feel like maybe the police should have done a better job of checking that house at the end of the movie. That's all I'm saying. Because, if we're going to go into the, oh, there was a giant spider attacking you, okay, and then they just left and then didn't have any other thoughts.
I mean, who knows? You don't know. I mean, maybe whatever happened at the end of the film, maybe they were part of an official crew or something. I don't know. Maybe it's the local town CDC. You don't know.
It sounds like the local town CDC needs some, training.
But overall, I think this film is a great way to honor the films of the past as well as look forward to the future with a hand both in their... a hand both on modern storytelling and also a hand on practical age-old effects and just artistry in that effect.
Mm.
You know, because the story, like I said, is great. The effects, the special effects are just, I love them to death. And on top of that, you get like all these great nods to classic horror films. Like you get a great nod, as I mentioned, to Halloween towards the tail end of the film. You get a great nod towards Alien with the way the you see the spider like open up and everything. It's like, oh, that looks like when the alien facehugger looks like coming out of the eggshell.
Okay, I'll give the movie this. That was probably the creepiest scene when that spider molted, because I had no idea what the heck it was doing. And I was like, it seems to be growing larger or something, and I do not like this.
And then even in its quiet places, this film does not rely heavily on jump scares. And I appreciate that about this. We talked about this with Insidious, or we're going to talk about this with Insidious this Friday when we drop that episode, wink, wink, giving it a little bit away for that episode. But when we talked about that film, you know, we talked about how James Wan didn't want to use cheap jump scares to create that sense of fear and dread in the film, which is appreciated. This is one of those movies that does the same thing. It doesn't rely heavily on cheap jump scares or things falling out of the you know, things falling and there being a loud noise or whatever. This film has true fear built up, anxiety. You know something big is happening or coming, and you just don't know when it's going to happen.
I think also another thing I really liked about this movie is going back to like that pill bottle thing where like you just see it scratched off. I liked how this movie didn't really just like spell everything out from the beginning.
Mm.
Like it took its time to actually be like, hey, this is missing something. What do you think this means? It gives you some time to actually think about, you know, what is going on and what you're being shown.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just not enough movies that just like think that the audience is intelligent enough to like start to piece together the movie while they're watching.
And that's part of like part of this journey that Spence and I are going on with, you know, horror movies and all that, is recognizing like the true artistry isn't in just ridiculous films. It's in smart filmmaking, mm-hmm. smart storytelling. And if you can create a smart story, a smart combination of fear and dread with beautiful storytelling, you have something on hand. And I think that's what this film does. Another little homage, and I just remembered it right now. The little girl's name, Cambria,
mm-hmm.
that's actually the town where Arachnophobia takes place.
Ah.
So just a little short nod there. But wrapping this whole thing up, Spence, what are your final thoughts on the film?
I have to say, I was kind of surprised with this one. Because I was like, okay, we'll watch it. I'll probably forget what it's about in like 2 months.
Great.
That's comforting.
But this movie, like, you know, I saw it yesterday, and I've been thinking about it a good portion of the day. We're like, this movie did like a lot of things right. There was a few things that were a bit rough about it, but you know, that's the type of thing you can just fix with time.
Oh yeah.
But overall, I walked away kind of impressed. They did a great job.
Yeah, I have to agree. Like, this is the type of film that really brings back that, and I don't know if this makes sense or anything, but that youth fear that I had as a child of like things like spiders and things like this, like that basic innocence, that fear of innocence of, you know, when I was younger, what would simply scare me. I like the idea of this going back and bringing the old, it's almost like bringing the old gods of horror in a modern package, you know, and it's great because I think it does an awesome job displaying what smart storytelling looks like with a true horror element that builds and builds. And it doesn't look cheesy. It doesn't look cheap. It doesn't look ridiculous. And it could be real for all we know. Like, seriously, there could be. I mean, they got bird killer tarantulas and spiders out there that are huge. You've never heard of those?
No.
They're called bird killers.
Eddie, how is the podcast reviewing the movie going to be scarier than the movie?
I'm just saying, there are things out there in this world we do not know. But I say all that to say, you know what? There are so many great things out there for what this film is helping emulate, and I appreciate it, and I really enjoyed it. So, from the top, Spence, how does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
This movie definitely passes. I'm going to give this movie 3.5 because, you know, they did a great job. The acting was pretty good. Tasha Yar was in it, and I love her.
Well, I'm glad you know her by one name.
Some of the CG was a bit rough, but the practical was pretty good.
True.
So, yeah.
Very true. Same here. I got to pass this film. This film definitely has been worth the wait. Over 2 years in the waiting, and I was not disappointed in the least. This film passes, and in terms of monocles, I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5. I loved every bit of this film. I loved the journey it took me on, and I have to say, this is a return to form for animal horror films. Like, we had films like Cujo, and then we had Arachnophobia, and then they did little things here and there, but nothing's ever been to that level of fear and dread in movies. It's all been like supernatural beings or beings that are completely out of our hand, things that we can't control. This is an element that is so very real and so very much a strong possibility, and because of the way this world is, this may just actually happen in the near future. Somebody may be dumb enough to go and take something that doesn't belong to them from deep within the Amazon, bring it to the Americas, and it overtake the world in less than 12 hours. Who knows? But the fact remains is that with great storytelling and a great buildup of anticipation, fear, and an awesome technical perspective as well in this film, I got to give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Okay.
Mind you, small notches here and there. The CGI, like you said, towards the tail end was a little interesting. It did take a little getting used to. But for what they had to do with the spider overall and every step that they took, you got to appreciate it. So there you go. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on all our social media platforms at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We're also on Instagram at filmlosophy101. You can also check us out at our website at filmlosophers.com, where you can head out, check out all of our previous episodes. We've got a good amount of them, over 180. Love for you to see them. Just to let you know, we got a great event coming up this upcoming weekend. We got a Halloween trivia night. We are partnering with Oblivion Comics and Coffee to bring you a fun evening of trivia and games and fun and everything else in between. Spencer's going to be there, and he's going to be dressed up as something unique. So you got to come and see so you can know what's going on, because I'm not even sure what Spencer's dressing up as.
Yeah, but this is totally something we talked about
before. It is. Exactly. See, I'm glad he knows.
Uh-huh.
So if you're in the Sacramento area, head over this Saturday at 6 o'clock to Oblivion Comics and Coffee, the 26th at 6 o'clock. We'd love to see you there. So, yeah, that about wraps up another awesome episode, and we're glad you were able to join us. So, stay safe this Halloween season. If we don't talk to you until then, by all means, be safe. Right?
Yeah.
And watch out for them spiders.
Yes.
So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.